You're listening to Perpetual Traffic.
Hello and welcome to the Perpetual Traffic Podcast.
Show where we talk about marketing strategy and business sales, and definitely not the show where we talk about the biological species difference between a Byzantine river shark and an angel shark.
Thank God for that. I'm Ralph Burns, the founder of Tier 11.
And I'm Lauren Petrullo, founder of Mongoose Media.
All right. Well, I'd love to talk about, was it the mating habits of different sharks? We're not talking about that today. Actually, what we're talking about here today is way more important, I think, for you, the marketer, because we are looking in the future here, Lauren Petrullo, and you have some extraordinary insights into how big companies actually look into the future because of your prior experience at the Walt Disney Corporation. And I don't know as if people know that about you. It's a bit of a hidden secret. I always sort of wonder, why the hell would Lauren live in Orlando, of all places, for somebody like you? And it's not just because Ian Garlick lives there with his big ranch. You know, you were pulled there by Disney. And one of the really interesting things that we've talked about is you were brought on staff there to give insights into the future. And this is like a Disney, these big companies, like, they don't mess around. They're not thinking about like today and tomorrow. They're thinking about 5 to 10, 20 years out, probably, like long-term vision stuff. So maybe just give a little bit of background about that, because that's fascinating, like how you kind of got your start. And then you stuck around Orlando, and there you are. And now your awesome husband are looking to get the hell out, which will help you with that in future shows. But tell us about that journey a bit, because I don't think the Perpetual Traffic listener knows much about that.
Well, yeah. So I worked at Disney Institute with the business consulting Disney, and then on their in-house idea agency under Disney Marketing. And one of the pieces that you're totally spot on about is not the most immediate acquisition. Like, of course, there's revenue and cash flow, but it's a generational acquisition, because I think what was really interesting for me is when you looked at Disney World versus Disneyland, they had two different marketing strategies, because Disneyland, it's like 80% annual pass holders. So it's totally drive-in market, people that are attending Disneyland in California, where there are only two parks, versus Disney World, which is, you know, the same size as the city of San Francisco, has four parks, like 20 plus hotels, a whole wide range of it. 50% of the visitors like actually have never been to Disney World before, whereas the other 50% are returning. So how do you accommodate, reach that 50% market so that they come back again? And then in land, it's definitely the most immediate option, because when you get to Orlando, it's like you're in a bubble, because Disney World is so large. It's expensive for you to leave Disney World. It's like a fun fact of why there's no monorail from the Orlando airport directly into Disney World, because it would have been a monopolization of tourists. But that's a whole separate thing. The whole point is that like Disney goes after generational acquisition and have to keep going after different customer segments and appealing to them to want to come back to the same vacation, because preschoolers, grandparents, Brazilians, those were three whole different departments of marketing within the Walt Disney Company, hence why I'm like so excited to talk about today's subject.
That's wild, really. Like, they thought about that kind of stuff, like markets as specific as like the Brazilian market. Like, how do we target the Brazilian market?
Yeah, because when they fly to Orlando, they come with money. And the whole like Disney Springs, for those, again, sorry, this is going to like super into Disney episode probably, because that's just my experience and where I am. For those that don't know about Disney Springs, formerly Downtown Disney, it's a shopping and entertainment district where it's free to enter, much better to park now. A lot of that was built off of how much money is spent by tourists at the outlets. So people fly into Orlando, not just from Brazil, but from all over the world. And you'd go to a Target on iDrive, or if you go to one of the outlets, you'll see regular transactions of $1,000 to $2,000 per store, per customer. In fact, like Coach Maximize, you couldn't buy more than five bags of the same design. Like, there were rules put in place because there's just this inundation of purchasers in person in Orlando. So Disney Springs project was, how might we bring some of those purchasers to do it on property versus having to leave? Because every time someone who's staying at Disney World left, got into a car, got into an Uber, whatever, when they left property, that money had no flow through Disney. So they opened up a whole expansion of a dining and entertainment shopping district because these tourists, and they were always foreign tourists buying at the outlets in Brazil with taxes and imports and all that stuff. There are like full companies that help people optimize their shopping in the US, taking advantage of sales tax and non-import taxes before they come home. So it's really common to know that a Brazilian family would bring as many people as they can just for their extra suitcases so that they enjoy a vacation while the parent or the business owner uses their suitcases to fill back with products that they'll resell or that they'll buy for a fraction of the price. So yeah, the whole Brazilian department at Disney, oh, that was a whole thing. If you ever go into the parks in February, you'll see people with green shirts and flags everywhere because it's like their charter flights. It like feels like half the country has come to Orlando.
That's wild. So for today's conversation, I mean, obviously the experience that you had at Disney, that's just one example, is what we want to talk about here today, sort of future, thinking about the future of the different generations that are coming through right now and how marketers need to market to them. And when you started at Disney, your job was actually to give insights into some of these generations. And there's some that are even emerging now that a lot of people, I think, don't even really even realize are coming of age within the next couple of years. It's a whole new generation. We all know about Gen X, millennials, as you just corrected me, Gen Y. I didn't realize they were the Gen Y, but millennials, obviously, Gen Z. And then there is even a newer demographic that I think a lot of folks don't even realize is there. And it's, like I said, it's coming of age within the next year or two. And the buying cycle is Gen Alpha.
Yeah.
And you and I were reading an article, which is actually sent to us through our new creative director at Tier 11, which is a great article. We'll leave a link in the show notes. Is how to market to and how you have to sort of look at the differences between Gen Y, millennials, and Gen Z. And then the emergence of even like, and these are some of the insights that I think you can bring to the table today, is how are you plan for the future for Gen Alpha?
Yeah.
Like, this is the iPad kids generation. This is a completely different generation. And so just for reference here, if you don't know this, and this is always something that I think a lot of people sort of talk about, but we always sort of forget where the benchmarks are. But if you look at the top of the funnel, like Gen X, which I guess that would be me, 1965 to 1980. So you can take a guess somewhere in there. Millennials, anywhere between 1981 and 1996, I believe. Gen Z is 97 to 2012. Okay. So those are 12 to 27 year olds. Millennials are 28 to 43. So early 40s on millennials. So fair amount, obviously, buying power. That's one of the things that's hugely affecting like a lot of the buying power right now. And then Gen Alpha is anything between 2010 and 2024, just present day. And those are 0 to 14. So 14 at the top of the rung, like, couple of years from now, they're going to be able to, they're going to get their credit cards, or if their parents are irresponsible, I probably already have them. I don't even know if that's legal, but
I had a credit card at 12 years old. Okay.
Oh my God.
I got added to my mom's. And I'm telling you, I had the best credit score out of anyone I knew. So my mortgage,
I'll bet you did.
When I bought my house at like, what, 23, 24 years old, was only possible because I was able to, now, I never used that card. But it existed and it was attached to my mom's name. Unfortunately, she was responsible with her spending. But I was 12 and I demanded a credit card.
Well, you know, and here you are today. So, I mean, the point is, is that the way that I think all these generations are marketed to is very, very different. So we're going to leave a link. And this is actually a great article from Vogue. The only way to consume it really is on mobile, by the way. So I'm going to be looking at my phone as we're going through this so we can draw some references to it. So tell me about like what you know about this subject. So millennials versus Gen Z, let's just talk about that. Well, obviously we'll hit on the Gen Alpha, and you were brought into Disney for the millennial or the Gen Z component to sort of give those insights. Millennial. Okay.
I am a millennial. It was, when talking about these different campaigns and the perspective I had, it was definitely making sure that I brought that different lens into it, because otherwise you had a bunch of older people talking at a generation. So it was just providing that different insight to be a voice in a room of non-millennials.
Right. It's super interesting. So you're going to be able to lend some insights here. I think one of the big parts of this article, which I think we all sort of know generally, but it articulates it quite well, is that the consumer funnel, like the way that we think of the traditional funnel, was built for the old world, was built for the millennial and the Gen Xer, right? But Gen Zs, they just don't live there anymore. It's like they're all over the place, which makes, you know, some of the episodes that we've recently aired about like attribution and how to actually track everything, like you're going from device to device to device to over here to over there to, it's crazy. It's just like chaos. And it's even more so with Gen Z, because Gen Zs just don't buy the way that millennials and Gen X do. So what's your take on that? Some of the takeaways from this article and your observations, obviously being in that generation, looking at your younger, your younger gens in the Z generation.
Well, side note, I just like a thing that I think most people don't realize that like, so if you're Gen X, I'm Gen Y, millennial, Gen Z, then Alpha is next and Beta is born next year. It's just, it's a progression of an alpha. And people are like, I don't know which one it is. I was like, it's, can you do the US alphabet? It's not US alphabet. I don't know what the alphabet is, but there's more than one alphabet, whatever our alphabet's called.
Isn't that Greek?
Oh, shit, isn't it? Oh my gosh. Alphabeta they are. Oh, withdrawn. Oh my gosh.
There you go. You need a Gen Xer to be able to like state the obvious.
That's really funny. Well, I figure skated, so that's the only reason I do Alpha, Beta, Gamma, Delta. I was not a sorority girl. I was an athlete in college.
You're a sorority.
I was not that person. But
and Providence College didn't have any sororities or fraternities, so we just had Eaton Street. So anyway, so be that as it may.
Oh, gosh, this is too funny. Okay, going back to like how they like definitely will shop differently before. It's just generally like true to form. There's percentages that are breakdown in this article from Vogue that talks about like 57% versus 46% of Gen Zers versus millennials in assuming a brand is lying. So the whole idea is that millennials have been the most avid consumer of consumption before they buy. We know a lot, Amazon buyers, they immediately go to the reviews. Very few people will purchase something from Amazon without reading reviews. Why? Because they just assume that it's marketing lies and persuasion tactics that they don't have time for. So if you look at the whole funnel piece of things, like a lot of stuff starts with discovery. And I think for millennials, but especially for Gen Z and without a doubt, Alpha's generation, you're going to have like a new pre-stage, which will be inspiration. So before they're even discovering solutions or learning about you, there's an inspiration piece that's dependent on not the brand. So it's like an inspiration, an introduction, and then they'll start discovering. And if someone wants to fight me on this, like I'll go all day on this. But I think there's adding an additional step to the awareness journey, which is dependent upon inspiration and that import of information to someone else. But yeah, that in those different pieces, both Gen Zers and millennials want to know everything about a product before they're going to buy. So if you are in the stage of just thinking, hey, this is great, world-class product, buy it, but you don't have reviews, you don't have people that were obviously not paid by you to say that, you're going to have a really hard time getting in front of the purchasing power behind millennials, but even more so behind Gen Zers, because they're even savvier as they've grown up digital first. They're busy. They know that they have to learn a lot about a product before. So anything that you wasted their time with just devalues the brand's reputation.
Yeah. I think one of the key pieces to this is like discovery of new products, brands, services, experiences, both Gen Z and millennial. Number one is YouTube.
Yeah.
Which totally makes sense. But where they diverge is the second most important area, the second most popular area, which is for millennials, it's a Google search. And it's probably for Gen, if you compare Gen X, it'd probably be like Google search first, or maybe like 50-50 between like, probably not even YouTube it would be Google search first, or now maybe like ChatGPT,
yeah.
You know, if you're on the cutting edge. So it's going more, you know, visual medium, non-search based discovery for brands. And I think that's a really important trend here, especially if you're a marketing director, a VP of marketing, and your demographic is Gen Z, okay, 12 to 27. Now, obviously, the buyers here are millennials. Let's call it what it is right now. I mean, obviously, you all these people, like, I mean, shit, you had a credit card when you were 12, for crying out loud. So, I mean, it seems like every little kid has either the influence on his parents. They are buying.
Gen Alpha has influenced parents, I think, in a different sure. way. Because yeah. if you look at YouTube premium subscribers, a lot of those are parents that don't want to hear their kids screaming at a YouTube ad. So they're consuming, and it's just like you said, the tablet. So when they're out to dinner, they're yeah. just constantly watching stuff.
Well, we see it all the time. It's just, my God, I can't stand it, actually. It makes me sound so old, but it's like, come on, engage.
But there's going to be a hard part.
Yeah. I mean, it's a hard thing. I mean, if you're bringing up kids right now, like, when do you actually introduce a phone? Like, for us, it was when they were 14. You know?
There's popularity around late. Wait for eight, like wait till eighth grade. But I don't yeah. know a lot of people that are between 7 and 10. Maybe they don't have a phone. And I think even just thinking that they need a phone is showing your age a little bit, only in a sense of like maybe someone would have like a smartwatch or a different smart device, because like kids aren't carrying purses. So where would they even put the phone? But having some sort of communication connection point, I think, is starting much, much earlier. Like, I think you're going to see Gen Alphas continue to have wearable technology even before an iPhone or whatever phone.
100%. 100%. So in this study, or like I said, we're going to leave the article in the show notes over at perpetualtraffic.com, obviously. But it's really interesting to see, like, if you are marketing a brand, like, this is absolutely vital for you to get this. If you want top of funnel discovery, which is complete awareness, and completely unaware of your product even existing, and you are targeting the market between 43 years of age and teens, and you're not on YouTube or you're not on TikTok, you are missing out. And the problem here, and we see this, we met with a client last night, Lauren, and we're like, why are you guys not like ramping up your YouTube? Because hugely visual medium, like a couple $100 million brand. They do like luxury goods. They do just really like top end, super, super visual, like these great, you know, excursions and so forth. And so much of it's visual.
Yeah.
And it's like at top of funnel, and they're relatively new with us. And it's fine. They're still sort of in that phase. We're sort of feeling each other out. We're getting great results for them right now. But I'm like, the next phase of this is top of funnel. They're not targeting Gen Xers. They're probably even targeting, they're probably targeting baby boomers more. Mm. But the point is that the thing that they resisted on this is that we can't track it. There is no way for us to track because, hey, even if we do show all our great videos and we spend millions of dollars, like, how do we figure that out? Because they measured the effectiveness of their advertising sure. based on a couple of obscure measures, which doesn't really make sense, but that's the way that they've done it for a while, and they're very, very successful. So they've sort of stuck it in that way. But especially on these other mediums, like, I am so bullish on YouTube just in general. TikTok sort of second, especially with the creative agency of the woman that actually recommended reading this article. It's like, it's a completely visual medium. And this is where it's all going. But you can't track it because it's typically no click. And that's the hard part. It's just consumption. And that's where you need sort of secondary metrics. That's where you need the ability to be able to measure different channels and be able to tweak and test and have a human in the middle of it. AI is never going to control it. We're looking at solutions for this. We're really actually close to this. But still, the view can't be tracked.
Or so, trusted at times, because people get distracted and walk away. But
100%.
Look at this article. I mean, there's ways that you can do some pieces. The article is designed as not a long sales letter. It's not a thesis. It's a visual representation of data that maybe 10 years ago would have been in a denser consumption of media, but it's visually apparent and it's telling you this guided story. It's like an immersive kind of piece to it. The only thing that I'm surprised it doesn't have is a soundtrack in the background, because a lot of people that are reading books right now, you can add the immersive audio to it so that you can hear the door slam. You can hear the fireworks and stuff like that as you're progressing based off of where your scroll is.
So what you're saying is, like, the article itself, like I said, we'll leave a link in the show notes, but you've got to actually pull it up on your phone because it is an immersive experience. Like, the article itself is a representation of how to grab attention to this, both of these generations, especially the Gen Z generation. Am I making a leap of faith there? Is that what you were trying to articulate?
100%. Yeah. You don't want to just have stale information for them to download. I mean, you can look at it on your desktop, of course. It's just, know that most Gen Zers are looking at it on their phone to begin with. So just see 100%. How that perspective is. What I really like about these pieces is when you get to the section that's like exploration, it actually forces you to signal an additional trigger that you're continued at this place, because you have to watch a full visual display across your screen before it'll actually load the next section. So it's creating friction points for further consumption in a stylized way that it's just rewarding you as like, oh, that was nice. Now let me get back to what I want to read. So it's almost like these nice touching and talk points back to it.
Yeah, I mean, it's laid out so well. I mean, it's obviously it's Vogue business here. So we're talking about cutting edge style. It's great because there's a lot of different comparisons between the two. And I think the differences in shopping behavior I find fascinating.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that just a little bit. Just like, all right, we know visual mediums at top of funnel to get awareness. Okay. We're going to beat that drum on this show relentlessly because it's so vitally important. Point is, it's like, all right, then the purchase decision. Let's talk about like the shopping side of the equation. Are millennials and Gen Zers, are they different as far as their behaviors go when they actually make the purchase, or are they more alike?
Oh, well, I think it's getting further and further away from how people traditionally buy. And I think what I hear that's really frustrating, like I do pop-ups, like I have an e-commerce, I'll have physical presences. And I hear from other retailers in person all the time how much they hate that Gen Zers are shopping while in store. So they are fact checking, they are price checking, they're holding you accountable to what you're putting in front of them. And most store owners are like, what are you doing? You're not supporting small business. You're in my store. I got you in here. You should buy from me. Whereas the Gen Zer is like, let me confirm that you're worth my money. Let me see if this is something. And a lot of people will look at it as like a negative thing that they're on their phone while in your store, whereas really it should be a positive component because they're so interested that they're almost ready to make the purchase and they know that they need to know enough before they use their purchasing power to validate whatever they were looking at. So I think what's definitely different for millennials versus Gen Zers are millennials, and this is not for everyone, but I think feel bad about like price checking in store because like brands like Best Buy and all these others say like, hey, if you find another price, we guarantee that will match it. That was a relatively new concept 10, 15 years ago, I think, where it was like published everywhere because they didn't want to lose the sale to Amazon. But you have Gen Zers that grew up knowing that was the standard. So because that was a standard, they're actually looking and comparing before they make the buy. So I think that behavior is true with millennials, but much stronger for Gen Zers. And I think it's just because of when they were introduced to that concept.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're a retail shop owner and you've got a bunch of Gen Zers on their phone in your store, it's actually not a bad thing. It also means that you have to have the social proof and the product to back it up, which doesn't that make business better in a lot of ways?
Yeah.
I mean, these are active consumers. These are not just people that are going to say, that looks pretty good. Well, I'm going to check that on my phone.
Yeah.
You know, I always sort of feel bad when I do it. Do you? Like, I don't know. I feel kind of guilty, like going to like a wine store and then I take a shot of the bottle of wine, like make sure it's on my Vivino app. Like it's a good bottle of wine. And it's like, if it's not, it's like, I don't buy it. You know what I mean? Instead of like asking the clerk. Because it's just it's so much easier.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And this is how, not that I am Gen Z or Gen Y here, but I mean, that is a trend. And you've got to just sort of embrace it. If you're a bricks and mortar operator and you're listening to the show here and you're seeing this and you're like, yeah, I got all these Gen Z like, oh man, and they're always on their phones. Well, they're probably looking at your stuff.
Yeah.
So, which also means that your social presence is not optional, right? It's absolutely essential. You can't not have it at this point in time. It's 2024, for Christ's sake. If you don't have like a Instagram account or a Facebook account, or at least doing something on TikTok or LinkedIn or whatever it is, whatever your medium is, you're serving either a Gen Z or a millennial audience. It's absolutely essential. I think that kind of goes without saying, but I feel like I needed to say it.
I mean, it's modern PR. And I think parts of it too is it's clout chasing, and where you may feel guilty and stuff of that. You brought up a really good point that you would have asked a store person, but we don't have store associates anymore. So there's likely not someone that was close enough to you to give you the answer. And we're in this give me an answer now, Amazon Prime same day delivery phase, where if you don't see someone in your immediate vicinity, you're just going to find the answer yourself because it's faster and easier for you because you don't have to explain who you are and your buying habits. So again, if you have someone in the store, because you're looking, it's like your initiate checkout in store presence. And so I think for brands that really want to embrace this, and the opportunity is you already know they're going to be on their device. One, obviously make Wi-Fi available because you get to own all that data of who's physically in the store and give them the free access as long as they like your Instagram page or something to that, like gamify it a little bit. Like the way people do check-ins, but two, provide immersive experiences next to your product displays. Like if you have the ability, the budget, and the motivation to do it, there's some really great in-store plays that you can do to have people on their device to become further in love with your brand by using like augmented reality. Lego Store has done this really well, where if you take the product and you put it in front of their augmented reality, mixed reality device, you can then see what the product in the box looks like built. So then you have people seeing it from all different angles, and you can own and control what they're looking up and look what they're looking at versus the assumption of default going to social media to see who has put their name and reputation behind this, or checking on Amazon reviews, again, who has put their name and opinion behind it. So if you provide a QR code or something that surprises and delights them with more information, think how this article is designed. They want to know the information. They just want to receive it in a fun, edutainment kind of way, where it's educating and entertaining.
Yeah. No, it's super interesting. And hopefully this is opening a lot of eyes for people of like that. You can't do business as usual in this environment. You have to actually start to evolve. Well, one of the very, very important parts to this I found fascinating in this article was, because we always talk about algorithms and the importance of the algorithm and AI and how Facebook and let's just say Meta, TikTok, Google, like they know more about you than probably the NSA does. So let's just call it what it is. You know, we have a leaked memo from Google that they have 72 million data points on every human on the planet. So that's a lot of data points. So having said that, like Google is the internet. All right. So that's why the platform works so well from an advertising or marketing perspective. But also Meta has an in-platform anywhere between 55 and 60,000 data points on every one of its individual users. Probably even more now. That's an old statistic because they don't want to leak that one out of there. But I found this fascinating that Gen Z and millennials on their opinions on the algorithm knowing them, instead of it seeing intrusive and an invasion of my privacy, it's like, thank God this is coming out this way now, because like all these old fuddy-duddies that are so like, you know, hell-bent on the algorithm and privacy, it's like, who cares really? Because it actually makes your experience on the platforms that much better. Now there's a whole counter argument to that, like on the political side, reinforces your beliefs. And then you become far more insular, especially when it comes to that, obviously the 2016, 2020 elections.
Yeah.
Got it. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about shopping and buyer behavior. So maybe you can talk to that, like how these generations actually trust the algorithms to help them. Let's talk about this over on Telegram. We've got a lot of folks in Telegram now. It's crazy. There's like so many people joining every single day. So definitely join that over at perpetualtraffic.com/Telegram. Lauren is now in there. because we need backup. You know, me and Kasim like need help. I'm trying to like recruit people, like answer all the questions here. But great to have you there. It's and feedback that you're giving us in there is super, super helpful for us to continue to scale and grow this podcast and help marketers and influence businesses and hopefully make a difference in the world, Lauren, because that's really what it's all about. It's not just about just becoming rich and famous. But wherever you listen to podcasts, make sure that you leave a rating, especially you Spotify people. You're awfully stingy, we've found recently. You don't even have to write anything, for crying out loud. Just hit the 5-star button. And of course, follow me on LinkedIn. Where's your preferred social channel, Lauren Petrullo?
Preferred?
Where do people like to?
I'm most active on Instagram at Lauren E. Petrullo. But I will tell you, for the next like quarter, I'm trying to get into X.
Well, there is that. So, and make sure that you do follow us over on YouTube, perpetualtraffic.com/YouTube. Channel is growing like a weed. And if I didn't mention it before, the Telegram channel, perpetualtraffic.com/Telegram. That's like 15 calls to action here at the end of the podcast, which you never really want to do. But anyway, on behalf of my awesome stand-in co-host this week, Lauren Petrullo.
See ya. That's how Kasim says it. See ya.
Until next show, peace.
You've been listening to Perpetual Traffic,